Flying Scotsman from the footplate.
The train standing at platform 1 is the 12:34 to Kidderminster, which will be hauled by Flying Scotsman.
The train driver and fireman are waiting to depart.
I think we're going for an on-time departure here. Yeah.
They lean out of the window and the cloth-capped fireman waves a rag.
Right away, Roger! Got the token Hampton load, mate.
Hampton load, yes, I've seen the Hampton load.
More baby.
I'm Roger Norfolk. I'm one of the volunteer drivers of the Severn Valley Railway. And it's my pleasure today to take this train from Bridge North to Kidderminster with Flying Scotsman. We're going to have a little bit of difficulty getting out of Bridge North because the engine's a coal engine and we're on a gradient of about 1 in 100. So I'm having a little difficulty actually getting the locomotive on the move.
Wearing his peaked driver's cap, the spectacled Roger tugs a lever, then turns another, but the locomotive remains at a standstill. A grey-haired man comes over.
Can I get another half turn or not?
The driver's the locomotive engineer who's travelling with the locomotive today.
We'll try that.
And he knows much more about the engine than I do, so he's just given me a little bit of assistance to try to get the locomotive under motion.
A huge cloud of steam envelops the train in the station. Roger continues to push and tug at the controls.
We seem to have got ourselves stuck, and the remedy in this situation is to ease the locomotive back.
Gone back. Yep. Oh, yeah.
To set the valves and the pistons in a slightly different position in order to get the locomotive underway.
Try again.
Looking out of his side window, Roger tugs a lever. The locomotive's huge wheels slowly begin to turn.
A locomotive like this is more built for speed rather than slogging up and starting away on a 1 in 100 gradient. But we're away.
Spectators line the trackside.
There's a lot of steam coming out the front of the locomotive. When the engine's been standing for some time, water tends to collect in the cylinders and you need to blow that out. Pistons and water don't really mix and you can do a lot of damage if you have water in the cylinders and the pistons then can't compress the water.
In the cab, the firebox glows bright orange. The fireman closes a flap over the front of it with his foot. The train passes over a bridge spanning a road, beside which a group of spectators on a grass verge watch its progress. The young fireman pops his head out the window.
I'm Ryan Green, I'm Roger's fireman for the trip. As well as managing the boiler and the steam pressure, I've also got to keep an eye out for the signals along the line, as sometimes they might be obstructed by steam or trees.
There's a fourth crew member in the cab.
Green,
thank you. Noel Hartley's from the National Railway Museum in York. He's with us today to make sure we look after the engine. Noel's a driver himself, and he knows the machine backwards.
That'll be fun and exciting.
Ryan shovels coal into the firebox, while Roger lifts himself out of his driver's seat to stick his head out of the side window and look back. The train's route on a graphic.
So now we're on our way. Down the valley of the River Severn, through some pretty stations, all the way as far as Bewdley, and then the railway turns towards Kidderminster, a town not too far from Birmingham, and a total run from Bridge North to Kidderminster of about 16 miles.
Steam rises from the chimney of the dark green locomotive, which trails then dissipates in the air as the train passes a field dotted with round hay bales. It then crosses a viaduct comprised of numerous tall red brick arches. Now, a low-level view of the track ahead, flanked by trees and thick foliage. Sitting on the right-hand side of the cab, Ryan reaches up to pull a cord, then leans out of the window. A plaque mounted on the locomotive's bulbous black nose reads "The Flying Scotsman" with two round thistle emblems. A plate below the plaque bears the number 60103. Roger sounds the whistle as the train approaches a small bridge. It passes underneath and emerges on a stretch of track that curves gently between tall banks of foliage. From a front-on view of the approaching locomotive's black nose and red buffer plate, to a view of the track ahead. Sleepers pass in a blur. In the cab, Roger pushes forward a lever and Ryan gets out of his seat to lift the flap on the firebox with the end of a shovel. Noel nudges his shoulder when he sits back down.
The other one on as well. The brass handles I'm adjusting are the injectors for the steam engine. They take water out of the tender and put it into the boiler. There are two injectors on a steam engine. This is so you can get more water into the boiler quicker. It's a little like having two taps to feed a bath.
Spectators lining a small stone bridge in countryside wave as the locomotive passes beneath them, momentarily engulfing them in grey smoke.
This is quite an exciting day for myself and Roger. This is the first time we've been at the controls of Flying Scotsman.
Ryan hoses down the footplate.
I'm hosing down the footplate because the footplate's quite a dirty working environment and you get quite a lot of the coldest on the floor.
Noel taps Ryan's arm, then takes the hose from him.
Noel's just taken over on the hose to wet down the coal in the tender. This reduces the amount of dust coming down into the footplate later on.
Ryan looks out of the window, then back at Noel, who's hunched over behind him with the hose. He settles into his seat. Roger sounds the whistle as they pass a sign with the letters SW.
I've just sounded the whistle because we've passed an SW board. SW stands for sound warning or sound whistle. They're usually placed in front of crossings, or in this case, it's placed in front of the platform at Erdington, which is a little bit unsighted around the curve.
All clear, Roger. All clear.
We also blow whistles entering tunnels and leaving tunnels, and generally whenever we see people on or about the track. Either of us can blow the whistle. The fireman in this case has blown because he's seen people on the platform as we pass through Erdington.
Spectators on the tiny platform at Erdington Holt wave to the passing train. Ryan lifts the flap on the firebox with his shovel, then feeds more coal into its brightly glowing belly.
along the 16-mile journey, we'll be using around a tonne of coal, and the engine will be drinking about 1,000 gallons of water. I'm shoveling the coal to keep the pressure up in the boiler and maintain the water level. This is so that the power is available when Roger wants to use it. The firebox is quite wide on Flying Scotsman. We have to keep the fire thicker at the back and towards the sides, and thinner in the middle and towards the front. That's the most efficient way of getting the most out of the fire.
Wiping his hands on a rag, Ryan returns to his seat and looks out the window. The connecting rods on the locomotive's wheels turning rhythmically as the train powers along. A curved nameplate on the side of the locomotive. Flying Scotsman picked out in gold on a black background.
It's a large locomotive. It's a three-cylinder engine, 96 tonnes or so. Boiler pressure working up to 220 pounds per square inch. So it's quite a big beast. It's a locomotive that's built for speed. We know in its day she did 100 miles per hour. And these days it's limited to 75 on the main lines. But here we have to keep it to 25 miles per hour. So sometimes it's a little difficult to keep under control because he just wants to go. She's a good old girl. She was built in 1923. She's done a few miles. She's held a few records. Yes, of all the A3s that were produced, she's probably the one that needed to be preserved.
A straight stretch of track with green fields below it to the left and wooded hills in the distance. Roger sounds the whistle.
Crossing's clear, Roger.
Pulling its line of carriages, the Flying Scotsman emerges from behind trees on a stretch of track that's set on an elevated embankment. Within the matter of a few hundred metres, however, the train heads into a cutting with steep banks to either side. Passing over the train and its trail of smoke. Stretched out ahead of it lies a sweeping vista of rolling countryside. A pinpoint flash of light in an adjacent field identifies three small figures as camera-toting spectators. From behind Roger in the driver's seat, the passing countryside is viewed through a thin veil of smoke. Roger's wearing light blue bib and brace overalls over a striped shirt and dark blue tie. His sleeves are rolled up to his elbows.
I've got two controls here to make the train go. The regulator is the one I'm holding now, which is the valve that emits steam from the boiler to the cylinders. And now I'm on the reverser, which cuts off the steam at a certain point in the valve's travel. And there's a balancing act between the two to try to maintain the momentum of the train. And how much of each you need is very much driver's intuition, his instinct. And he goes by the sound of the locomotive as well.
The track ahead, bordered by low banks of foliage in shades of green and brown. Ryan.
Crossing clear, yellow distance.
Yeah, I think that's respond, I think.
Signals are like traffic lights. Some are advance warnings and some of them are definite stops. The knack is knowing where they are and where to be looking out for them.
Ryan leans out of the window, then closes the flap of the firebox with his shovel. Waving to spectators by a farm gate.
There's definitely something about a steam engine as you're going past crowds of people, because they always wave at you no matter what you're on. But the amount of crowds with Flying Scotsman, the amount of people that wave at you, is crazy. Every time I looked out the window, there was someone waving. It's just a fantastic feeling to know that everyone's come out to see this go through, and by getting the fireman or the driver to wave back has just made their day that little bit better.
Roger looks at a piece of paper, then checks his watch, before stuffing the paper into a pocket of his overalls.
I'm checking my timetable here, because I don't want to be arriving too early.
Come on, baby.
We're on a single line, and the next station, Hampton Lode, has a passing loop, where I'm very much hoping that the northbound train has already arrived, as we're due to pass through Hampton Lode non-stop.
Crossing's clear, Roger.
Clear. The signal.
Yes.
The rooftops of a small cluster of buildings pass below and to the left of the train. Roger leans out of his window and acknowledges someone with a raised hand and the shadow of a smile.
Green on the loop.
Green on the loop, lovely.
That's what we want, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll do.
Green on the loop means that we have the signal into the loop at Hampton Lode.
Token this end.
Yes. Hey. Yeah, wonderful. Cheers, Norm.
We're just preparing now to give up the token that's brought us from Bridge North, and it needs to be surrendered to the signalman. No other train can be on the line as long as you've got that token. That is our security, that we are the only train on that single line at that time. As we approach the station, I brought the speed down to 10 miles per hour because that's our standard station limits speed.
It's all doing it. Go on.
And you can see the signalman in his high visibility jacket standing ready to receive our token, but also then to give us the next token for the advanced section down to Highley.
A low-angle view of the wheels and connecting rods.
We're in at the end, Roger.
We're at the end.
You
think?
Highley,
thank you.
Thank you.
And now I'm looking for the signal at the end of the platform to make sure that the signalman has cleared the signal for us to proceed down the single line to Highley.
Passengers on a stationary train point their cameras out of the windows to capture the Flying Scotsman as it passes. The historic locomotive and its dozen or so maroon carriages rumble past a line of milk churns at the end of the short platform. Now the train's out again into open countryside. It passes a semaphore signal lit green, its arm horizontal at 3 o'clock. A cluster of brass gauges, one showing speed, another pressure. Ryan leans out of the window and looks behind.
The last coach has left the loop at Hampton Lode, and now we can accelerate up to line speed.
We're all clear at the back, Roger.
Clear at the back, thank you. We're at the loop then.
Roger runs a rag down the thick shaft of the regulator lever, then sounds the whistle.
Come on your side.
Yeah, clear.
Trees line the side of the track, and undergrowth almost encroaches onto the line. then tips his cap to someone observing from within the trees. Then on the driver's side, a small group of people has gathered to watch the train pass from behind a 5-bar gate. A little further along, more spectators wave and take photos from a lane below. Wheels, piston, crankshaft, and connecting rods maintain their steady, almost hypnotic rhythm. Spectators have crowded onto a tiny platform at Country Park Holt. But they're rewarded with little more than a fleeting glimpse of the train as it thunders past. The track cuts through dense woodland.
Out for the home signal. And the token this end.
Noel unhooks a metal hoop token from behind the shovel.
Green, thank you.
The train slows as it passes tanker carriages parked in a siding. Ryan leans out of the window.
Yeah, just there on the ground, Matt.
Then Noel leans out behind him.
Down the ground, down there.
Yeah, but I can't do it.
Up ahead, a man wearing a high-vis jacket's standing just beyond the track points. He's holding a hoop token in his raised hand, which he passes to Noel.
Highly Arley.
It's got a ring to it.
Shortly afterwards, a platform appears on the left, and the train passes through Highley Station. The station building has an old-fashioned enamel advertising sign on its wall. The station master films the train on his camcorder.
Got a green, mate.
Got
a green,
yep.
Ryan opens the flap of the firebox and shovels in some coal.
Having just gone over the top of Highley Bank, the fire needs some attention now, just to build the fire back up. If we're accelerating going up a hill, I'll need to put more coal on to create more pressure. If we're going downhill and braking, I'll want to be putting more water into the boiler, but making sure that the fire's not too hot to make too much steam. The communication's key between the fireman and the driver. Roger's always keeping an eye on what I'm doing, and he has to have confidence that I'm able to create the right amount of steam for what he wants if I've got enough fire there. The more efficient Roger drives, the more efficient my firing will be. It's all a balance now between driving and firing.
Roger smiles as Ryan sounds the whistle. A heap of coal in the tender and a steady stream of smoke from the chimney. Then the blue Flying Scotsman plaque on the locomotive's black nose. On the footplate, Ryan adjusts his collar as he looks ahead.
Crossing's clear. High-vis your side, mate.
High-vis my side. Yeah, I got him.
Keeping his hand on the whistle cord, Roger sounds it again.
I
Spectators have gathered on either side of a small ungated crossing. Now, on a raised embankment, the train passes a large building on the banks of a river that runs parallel to the track. Gentle hills with patches of woodland complete the bucolic scene. The stretch of river is empty, but for three tiny craft. The locomotive leaves a wispy trail of smoke in its wake as it continues to follow the path of the river. Spectators are scattered at intervals across the broad grassy banks of the river to watch the train as it passes above them. An SW sign appears at the side of the track, and Roger reaches for the whistle.
Crossing's clear.
Ryan alternates between looking at gauges and leaning out of the window. Ryan opens the firebox flap.
We're now looking at the water level in the boiler, which is a little bit higher than I anticipated it would be at this point. So just going to turn off the injector, which feeds the water into the boiler. Unfortunately, you're going to have to vent some steam out the safety valves.
Ryan's overcooked the fire a little bit here. He's put a little bit too much coal on. Perhaps I haven't used enough steam that he thought I was going to use. And the safety valve flows at 220 pounds per square inch on this locomotive. And we've just got a little bit more than that. So it's blowing the steam off to atmosphere.
Being a fireman, you take pride in doing the job well, but sometimes it doesn't always go to plan. Having something like the safety valves lift is a little bit embarrassing, but it's one of those things that happens from time to time, especially on an engine that you're not massively familiar with.
The arm of a red semaphore signal points down in a 7 o'clock position. The track curves to the right as they approach the next station on the route. The Flying Scotsman slows to a crawl as it passes another steam locomotive at a standstill. The crew of the other loco smile and wave to Ryan and Noel, who pass within touching distance from them. The engineer travelling on the Flying Scotsman's footplate collects a token from a man on the left side of the train. As with the other stations the trains passed through, there are plenty of spectators on Arley platform, eager to capture the event with their cameras. The The Victorian station building is constructed of buff-coloured brick with a slate roof.
Noel and myself have noticed that the shape of the fire isn't quite right. I've put too much in the middle of the firebox.
Well, the sides a bit more, we've got a lot in the middle.
Yeah.
Which is probably one of the reasons why it vented steam out of safety valves on the approach to Arley.
Your side, Roger.
My side.
Yeah, they're clear.
The track now aims for a wide swathe of dark green wooded hills in the distance. From the air, the train continues its journey at a stately pace. Cars are parked in a field on one side of the track. And on a raised embankment, the train passes the tiny dark specks of spectators spread out across the broad green carpet of lush grass. Beyond the field is a bend in a river, which is spanned by a cast iron railway bridge. The Flying Scotsman steams across it. On the footplate, Ryan feeds the firebox with shovelfuls of coal. Then retakes his seat on the right and leans out of the window. The train passes under two bridges in quick succession. Clouds and foliage are reflected in the locomotive's shiny black nose. Passing a broad grassy bank on another stretch of the river.
There's a load of people around here yesterday.
The locomotive's wheels, piston, crankshaft and connecting rods working in symphonic harmony. Rattling through the countryside, the train passes knots of spectators on a remote stretch of track bordered by trees and abundant vegetation. Ryan opens the flap of the firebox, exposing its fiery innards. Roger's eyes flit between the track ahead and the gauges ranged above him, his face a study in concentration. Another small group of spectators is waiting for them behind a pole and wire fence on a bend. All's calm on the footplate, with each of the four crew members at their stations. Ryan's leaning out of his window, and Noel standing behind him with his eyes fixed on the driver's gauges. Ryan briefly brings his head inside, rubs his nose with his thumb, and returns to his lookout position. The sky is bright, but with a blanket of light grey cloud cover. Roger smiles, and Ryan turns an injector handle.
We are approaching a level crossing here, and I'm slightly misjudging the approach.
Too soon. I'll do this bit right tomorrow.
There's a slight uphill gradient towards it, so I've had to open the regulator a little bit just to keep the train moving up to the level crossing.
Roger prepares to sound the whistle while Ryan busies himself topping up the firebox. Roger alerts Ryan with a tap on his back.
Watch out for the light.
Ryan leans out of his window, his head almost brushing the trackside vegetation.
Yeah, white light!
Got it. Yep.
This is Northwood Halt, one of the request stops on the line, which we won't be stopping at today on our non-stop run. The white light there tells me that the lights on the road crossing are working and stopping the traffic. We've just slowed down for the road crossing, and then we will accelerate back up to line speed once we're across.
From a view of the track ahead through trees to Roger and Ryan in their seats on the footplate. A curving line of orange light around the closed flap of the firebox glints like a fiendish smiley. Ryan calls across to Roger.
Yellow!
Yellow? Oh,
the yellow signal is an advance warning that the signals outside Bewdley may be at danger.
Crossing clear.
So in this situation, we'll have to slow down and proceed with caution to the next signal. If the next signal is at danger, we are going to have to stop at it.
Ryan acknowledges some spectators with a raised hand, but his attention's focused on the track ahead.
Red banner.
Now the banner signal is an advance warning of what the stop signal is going to tell us. The trouble here is that the stop signal is around that left-hand curve ahead and is not very good sighting distance. So at the end of this straight, we have that post with a round disc on the top. It's not actually red, but the position of the black bar in the centre is horizontal, which is telling me that the actual stop signal that's around the left-hand curve is going to be in the red or stop position, and I'm going to have to stop at it.
As the train approaches the curve, Ryan uses a rag to turn an injector handle, then quickly turns it back the other way when Noel goes to intervene.
Too soon.
Ryan cranes his head out of the window to see what's happening.
Red?
Yeah, red.
So now the actual signal has come into view and it is still red. So we're going to have to stop. And I'll be asking Ryan to step down off the footplate, go to use a telephone, just phone up the signalman, and find out what is the problem.
Ferns line the edge of the track on the left-hand side, and small weeds are sprouting up between the sleepers on the track. Ryan checks out of the window.
Still red.
Yeah.
Roger inches the train along as it approaches a red semaphore signal at 9 o'clock. He brings the Flying Scotsman to a standstill.
I think you'll have to go for the ring in, Ryan. Alpha 16.
Alpha 16.
Alpha 16, yeah.
Green. There you go, we heard you.
The signal's now pointing to 7 o'clock. Roger sets the train in motion again, and its giant wheels begin to turn, slowly gaining traction on the rails. On the footplate, Ryan opens the firebox and bends over to look inside. He takes a quick look out of the window, then tops up the firebox with a few shovelfuls of coal.
Can you see the bracket yet?
Oh yeah, Roger. Green up nine.
Green?
Yeah, green.
The train passes an SW sign.
Crossing is clear. 28 up at Tenbury as well.
Just beyond a semaphore signal set at 3 o'clock, a large group of spectators is waiting by the side of the track. More line the top of the bank on the other side. Ryan turns an injector handle. A steam locomotive sitting on the adjacent stretch of track, and Ryan acknowledges two men standing on top of its tender as the Flying Scotsman passes. Streets and houses spread out below the track on the right-hand side of the train, which then steams across a bridge spanning a road in the town. A signal box comes into view, and the waistcoated signalman's standing out on the track. Ryan and Noel are leaning out of the window.
We're now approaching Bewdley, and the signalman here is about to receive our token from Arley, but he hasn't got one to give us in return, because we're now on double track.
Spectators line the platform.
Hiya.
We're now on the up main. The track to our right is the down main, because between Bewdley North signal box and Bewdley South signal box, it is authentic double track.
Crossing clear, Roger.
More spectators line a second platform, which is partly canopied and decorated with colourful flower displays. Roger waves and smiles. Ryan tends to the firebox, turning an injector handle before shoveling in some coal.
This is Beardley's south signal box, and the signalman is in the window. He's not giving us a token, and yet we're going to go on the single line to Kidderminster, because this is another different signalling system, a system known as tokenless block by acceptance lever. It's all done electrically.
Green section. Green.
As soon as we clear these viaducts, then we can open up the engine, set the reverser for a good run up the 1 in 100 bank. We'll let the engine stretch her legs a little bit.
As the train chugs over a road, Roger gives a few sharp tugs on the regulator.
Just building up the fire to go up the gradient towards Bewdley Tunnel, which is one of the longer climbs on the line. The gradient is 1 in 100 in places, which may not seem a lot, but I do end up having to work the engine a little bit harder than we have done the rest of the journey.
Ryan feeds shovel after shovel of coal into the firebox's gaping, glowing mouth. Then closes the flap and, wiping his hands on a rag, returns to his seat to look out of the window. The locomotive's running gear up close, with the train's carriages stretching out behind and steam drifting across passing trees. Now a view forwards from the top of the tender of gentle countryside bathed in sunlight. Footplate, Ryan turns an injector valve on one of the numerous thick copper pipes that rise up out of the floor. He checks a gauge above him, then closes the valve. Leaning out of the window, he waves to spectators in a field that slopes down to the track. Roger prepares to sound the whistle. Then the train plunges into blackness.
And this is Bewdley Tunnel. 480 yards long, the only proper tunnel on the line. Still on an upward gradient of 1 in 100, slightly curved and now into the straight with the exit coming into view.
A small circle of light in the darkness grows larger. Then the train emerges into daylight between steep banks of vegetation. A front-on view of the locomotive exiting the tunnel in great billowing clouds of white steam and smoke. It approaches a semaphore signal, which, from the train, is set at 9 o'clock. The track cuts a narrow path through the canyon of greenery. The train slows as it reaches the signal.
In my braking coming along, I've noticed that it hasn't been particularly smooth. At least one of the carriages in the train behind is braking a bit harder than the others and causing us a bit of a jolt.
There's a coach back there somewhere grabbing the brake, isn't there?
So perhaps that's something that needs to be looked at later.
Passing a brick building to the left, where spectators watch from behind a tall wire fence. Ryan's leaning out of his window.
Green on the main.
On the main, thank you.
The train steams across a viaduct of dark red brick, its tall white arches dwarfing a small bridge that sits in its shadow. Roger stares ahead with concentration and focus, and the train picks up speed. His eyes flick to the gauges above him. Ryan waves to spectators standing in the gardens of modern houses that back onto the track. Most of the rear boundaries are fenced, but some homeowners have grown trees and bushes to obscure the view. More spectators are standing on a bridge, the brickwork above the arch blackened from the smoke of trains that have passed under it. Roger tugs on the regulator lever in front of him. Ryan leaves his lookout and comes over to Roger.
Stop on the mark and then.
Yeah. Well, you've got the bus driver.
Yeah.
I mean, the easing up first. All right.
All at red, mate.
The train slows as it passes a long, low green building to the left on the outskirts of the station. Ryan turns an injector handle. Roger gives the regulator a yank.
Still all red, Roger.
Yeah.
On a gantry up ahead, four red semaphore signals are set at 9 o'clock. The Flying Scotsman comes to a stop in front of the gantry.
Shall I give him a minute or just go straight down? Go straight down, right.
Ryan gets out of the cab, and Noel, who spent most of the journey standing behind him, takes the opportunity to perch for a moment in his seat.
Platform one is kept free for us. So what's the problem?
Has it been waiting till the other trains departed before letting this one in normally? So there's no crowd issue on the platform.
Oh, it's a crowd issue, is it? I see.
I'll just bring
it. Yeah, he's on his way out now. 12:32.
While Roger consults his timetable, a modern train zips past and another steam train chugs towards him on an adjacent track.
Well, he's a few minutes late. He should be 13:30, it's now 13:35.
Ryan's making a call from a trackside phone.
Hello, this is the final 60103 here, just sat outside there at the gantry. Wonderful, thank you very much. Bye-bye. Hiya!
Ryan makes his way back to the Flying Scotsman as the other train's line of mostly maroon carriages rumbles past.
Well, we've got a green.
Green, thanks.
Green on one, mate.
Roger sounds the whistle. And Ryan checks the firebox.
Not too horrific.
The wheels start to turn, and the legendary Leviathan edges slowly towards its destination.
Now that we're arriving in the Kidderminster, I just feel extremely proud to have fired this fantastic engine along 16 miles of beautiful countryside. Didn't go perfectly, but it went well. To actually be firing Flying Scotsman is just something you're never really going to forget. To actually be shoving the coal into the heart of it and making the steam to make it move, fireman of Flying Scotsman, it's a dream come true, really.
The train passes the signal box at Kidderminster Station. The running gear up close, maintaining its regular, reassuring rhythm.
I enjoy being in charge of a train. It's the teamwork involved, it's the responsibility involved, and it's doing your job to the best of your ability. And the job is done.
In bright sunshine, the Flying Scotsman comes to a stop beside a platform.
Do not stand on the benches, please, on the platform. Thank you.